We're going to begin today in chapter 7 of Daniel. There's a lot in verse 1 here. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Now, what we know about this is the book of Daniel is not written in chronological order, because chapter 7 comes in the first year of Belshazzar, and we know that chapter 5 was the last days, because Belshazzar is reported to have died when we saw chapter 5. So this was probably somewhere in around 552, 551 in the first year of Belshazzar, about 14 years before chapter 5 took place. That Daniel is now writing these visions. The Aramaic section of Daniel, by the way, goes from chapter 2, verse 4, all the way through chapter 7, verse 28. At the end of chapter 7 and verse 28, then there's no more Aramaic. It's all in Hebrew after that. Now, notice what he says. All right, so in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a dream and visions in his mind. Where was he when he saw this? As he lay on his bed, he saw it. It's interesting that chapters 1 through 6, by the way, are written mostly in the third person about Daniel. And this verse here starts in the first person, but throughout the rest of these chapters, you'll refer to Daniel. Daniel says, I saw that. Notice in verse 2, Daniel said, I was looking. So all of a sudden now, he's in chapter 7 and beyond, it goes from the third person about Daniel to Daniel talking about himself. I, Daniel, I saw that. I said this. I did. So you see all that happening in the chapters as we're going forward. Now he says, I saw a dream and visions, both dreams and visions. Dreams were given to the Gentile rulers. You notice that? You remember Pharaoh had a dream. Nebuchadnezzar had a couple of dreams. You know, he had this dream and that dream. And they were often given to Gentile rulers. And in chapters 7 through 12, the Lord God, Eternal God, gives these dreams and visions to Daniel in this book of Daniel. So no more Gentile getting it. Now, no more rulers getting it. It's going to be Daniel who gets these visions from here on. Now, what's the difference between dreams and visions? It's not that big a deal when regarding inspiration. They're the same. They're both inspired by God, and God is speaking to him, and God is giving him something in a dream or a vision. But the difference generally is that a dream is probably when you're asleep, and the vision comes when you're probably awake. In this context, the two terms are almost synonymous, and God's special revelations to Daniel about how these Gentile empires are going to affect God's people. These Gentile empires are going to affect God's people. So here's what Daniel does. In this first year of Belshazzar, you know, Daniel saw a dream and visions in his mind as he lay on the bed. Then he wrote down the dreams. He wrote them down and related the following summary. Now we have a summary. So here's a historical statement in verse 1, and now here's what Daniel wrote. Daniel said in verse 2, I was looking in my vision at night, by night, and behold, four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. The four winds of heaven. Now, here's a lesson in biblical understanding. Four is the biblical symbolic number for the world, for the whole earth, for the world. The Bible talks about the four corners of the world. In Daniel 8 and verse 8, you read here, then the male goat magnified himself exceedingly, But as soon as he was mighty and large, the large horn was broken, and in its place there came a conspicuous horns toward the four winds of heaven. Notice, talking about the four winds. That's the earth. In chapter 11 and verse 4 of Daniel, we read this, But as soon as he has arisen, his kingdom will be broken up and parceled out toward four points of the compass. I'm reading this from the New American Standard Version. Though not to be his own descendants, nor according to the authority which he wielded, for his sovereignty will be uprooted and given to others. So again, to the four points of the compass, four areas, four winds of heaven. In verse, this is how it's translated, chapter 11 of Daniel and verse 4 from the New English Translation. Shortly after his rise to power, his kingdom will be broken up and distributed toward the four winds of heaven or the sky. In Zechariah chapter 2, ho there, this is verse 6, Zechariah chapter 2, verse 6, ho there, flee from the land of the north, declares the Eternal, for I have dispersed you as the four winds of the heavens, declares the Eternal. That's Yahweh, okay? And Zechariah chapter 6, verses 5 through 7, here's what we read. The angel replied to me, these are the four spirits of heaven. You know, what are these spirits? What are the going forth after standing before the Lord of all the earth with one of which the black horses are going forth to the north country, and the white ones go forth after them to the dappled ones go forth to the south country. When the strong ones went out, they were eager to go to patrol the earth. And he said, go patrol the earth. So they went. You know, these four spirits, what are they doing? Patrolling the earth. Okay, that's what they're doing. So four is a sort of a number for the earth itself, for all the earth. Now, in these scriptures that I'm going to be reading you about, you know, the four winds, the number four, you're going to see that you have angels involved. We're going to separate them into two types of angels. One are the gathering angels, and the others are the destroying angels. Take a look at Isaiah for the gathering angels, Isaiah 11 and verse 12. And he will lift up a standard for the nations and assemble the banished ones of Israel and will gather the dispensed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. In Matthew chapter 24, verse 31, you see a similar statement. He will send forth his angels with a great trumpet, and they will gather together. Notice the gathering angel. They will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. And in Mark chapter 13, verse 27, pretty much the similar. And then he will send forth the angels and will gather together his elect from the four winds, from the farthest end of the earth to the farthest end of heaven. So when Daniel says, I beheld the four winds of heaven, he's talking about something that's happening on the earth. Now, you also have destroying angels. Take a look at Jeremiah chapter 49 and verse 36. I will bring upon Elam the four winds from the four ends of the heaven, and will scatter them to all these winds, and there will be no more, there would be no more nation to which the outcasts of Elam will not go. There will be no place, no location to which the outcasts, they're going to be scattered all over. Elam's we're going to be scattered. You see it in Zechariah, which I already read to you in above, Zechariah chapter 6 and verse 5. I'm not going to read it again, so I already read that. And now in Revelation chapter 7 and verse 1, after this, he says, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the earth, so that no wind would blow on the earth or on the sea or any tree. So they were destroying angels. They're going to not wind any blow on anything. Revelation chapter 9 and verse 14. He heard one saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates. And the four angels in verse 15, this is Revelation 9 verse 15, and the four angels who had been prepared for the hour and the day and the month and the year were released so that they would kill a third of mankind. So here are the destroying angels. And they all go over the earth, the four number, the four winds, the four corners, the four parts of heaven. Okay? Four angels and four angels to do it. These and similar phrases are a metaphor for God's activity in the world. The four combined with winds, corners, angels, implies that God knows, and God allows, and God controls all major human activity on the planet Earth. And nothing is going to take place outside of God's great plan that He has devised. He has a purpose here below, as I think that Winston Churchill said. God is working out a purpose here below. And God's great purposes. Now, God doesn't control what type of car you want to buy. God doesn't control what you're going to have for lunch, you know. But God controls the great things that are happening in the world today. And He is always the power in control. So notice the phrase, Daniel said, I was looking by night vision, and behold, four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. Again, was implying that God, the four winds of heaven, God was active. He was sending the four winds of heaven. He was going to disrupt earthly activities. So this chapter is yet another emphasis on the fact that God, our Father, controls history. And He controls the history of nations. Let's take chapter 2. I was looking in my vision at night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. And four great beasts were coming from the sea, different from one another. Now notice in chapter verse 2 and 3, it talks about the great sea. Now here's the question, what do we mean by the great sea? And we have a couple of meanings for this phrase. One is that it's the Mediterranean Sea, the Mediterranean Ocean. And it's called the Great Sea in the book of Numbers, chapter 34, verses 6 and 7. Numbers 34, as for the western, God is describing the border of Israel. Where does Israel go? The border of Israel goes, and you shall have, he says, as for the western border, you shall have the Great Sea. What's the border of Israel to the west? The Mediterranean Sea, the Great Sea. That is its coastline. This shall be your western border. And this shall be your north border. You shall draw your border line from the Great Sea to Mount Hor. So, Great Sea, from the northern border, the western border, all the way to the northern border, Mount Hor. Joshua chapter 9 and verse 1, you'll see it again. Now it came about when all the kings who were beyond the Jordan, in the hill country and in the lowland and on the coast of the Great Sea, on the coast of the Great Sea, toward Lebanon, Okay, that's the great, that's the Mediterranean Sea. And the Hittite and the Amorite, the Canaanite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and all the, and the Jebusites heard of it. Okay, so again, he's called the Great Sea. You'll see it, now, the Great Sea is all, it's literally, if you want to say literally, it's the Mediterranean Sea. From the point of view of the Bible, from the point of view of Israel, the Great Sea is the Mediterranean Sea. Now, but metaphorically, now you can take the word Great Sea and apply it as a metaphor for nations of the whole earth. Let's take a look at Psalm 65, verse 7. Who stills the roaring of the seas, the roaring of the waves, and the tumult of the peoples, of all the people? Who's going to still the roaring of the seas? It's a metaphor for all the nations, you know, combine the nations and the peoples of the earth. Because we want to have the Bible interpret the Bible. We don't want to make interpretations that are not biblical. So here it is, Isaiah 17, verse 12 and 13. Alas, the uproar of many peoples, who roar like the roaring of the seas. So when people arise, the armies happen, people arise, the nation arises, you know, like Hitler arose. You think that was a metaphor for rising of the seas, just like that. Like they're coming out, everything, you know. And, of course, they do. They use the seas, and there were great sea battles all over the world. And there always have been. Now, Israel didn't go to the seas. To seize that much in ancient Israel, but modern-day nations use these seas all the time. So Isaiah chapter 17, verse 12, alas, the uproars of many people who roar like the roaring of the seas and the rumbling of nations who rush on like the rumbling of mighty waters. The nations rumble. They rumble on like the rumbling of many waters, but he will rebuke them, and they will flee far away and be chased like chaff to the mountains before the wind, or like the whirling dust before a gale. So you have two metaphors. You have a sea metaphor. You have a water metaphor for churning up people. Here is Isaiah 57, verse 20. But the wicked are like the tossing sea, for it cannot be quiet, and its waters toss up refuse and mud. There is no peace, says my God, for the wicked. And then, of course, you have chapter 17 of the book of Revelation. We'll talk about that a little later. Let's begin to read the other parts here, okay? The first, so he says, out of the sea. He's seeing the sea. It could be the Mediterranean Sea, or it could be a metaphor for the general world of peoples. Out of this sea comes the first, these four beasts. The first was like a lion. Okay, now I want you to notice the word like. The first was like a lion. And as always, the context determines here. It refers to the known world, the ancient east of the parts and so on. And it's all the things that these Gentile nations of persecuting God's people. So chapter 7 of Daniel, verse 4. The first was like a lion. Notice the word like. Like is used here as an Aramaic preposition. And it's also used, it's repeated in verse 5, and it's repeated again in verse 6. He was like a lion. He wasn't a lion, but he was like a lion. So the first was like a lion and had wings of an eagle. Well, no lion has wings like an eagle. There's no such thing like that. I kept looking until its wings were plucked. Plucked wings would imply that it was damaged. It was hurt. The wings were plucked, so it couldn't fly very well. And it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And a human mind was given to it. But it's a beast of some sort. Sort of like resembles a lion. He didn't know what to call these beasts. So in verse 5, behold another beast. Okay, so here comes another beast. A second one, resembling, notice, like a bear, resembling, my translation, New American Standard says, resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side, and three ribs were in its mouth, between its teeth, and thus they said, arise, devour much. So the whole point of what Daniel was seeing was that these were not earthly animals, but similar to known animals. But they have different physical attributes, like a winged lion or a winged leopard. These are apocalyptic symbols of Gentile evil rulers and evil empires. Had wings like an eagle. Now, the Babylonian army, if the first one was like a lion, the Babylonian army is described in the scriptures. So let's go to other scriptures to show us what we're talking about here. The Babylonian army was described as a swooping eagle. Let's take a look at Jeremiah chapter 49, verse 22. Behold, he will mount up and swoop like an eagle and spread out his wings against Bozra and the hearts of the mighty men of Edom. In that day will be like the heart of a woman in labor. Ezekiel chapter, this is talking about what Nebuchadnezzar was going to do. Ezekiel chapter 17, verse 3, saying, thus says the Lord Eternal, a great eagle with great wings, long pinions, and a full plumage of many colors came to Lebanon and took away the top of the cedar. Habakkuk in chapter 1, verse 8, their horses are swifter than leopards and keener than wolves in the evening. They're keener than wolves in the evening. Their horsemen come galloping. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swooping down to devour. As something, a metaphor to describe the speed of how fast these armies could move. But the metaphor of plucked wings evidently had to do with a military defeat. These powerful national armies seemed invincible, but in reality, they were still just human armies. Notice how often in the verse, divine action is directed toward the Gentile armies, the Gentile empire. Wings were plucked. In the other thing, it was lifted up, the lion, lifted up, made to stand. It was made to stand. And a human mind was given to it. These are God's actions. These are God's interference with Babylon. If the first one is Babylon. So I'm just going to make the interpretation here that seems like it was Babylon because it talks about how it had wings like an eagle. And then you have chapter 7 and verse 5, and this is true, like it was raised up on one side. Notice the bear resembling a bear. And that might have been a symbol for the Persian Empire. And raised up on one side, and three ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And it was said to this bear, arise, eat a lot, devour as much as you can, eat as much as you can. God is in control. We know that from Daniel chapter 2, verse 20, and what Nebuchadnezzar had to confess in his madness in chapter 4. We have to be careful of trying to find a historical content for everything that we see here. I'm content to say I don't know exactly all that this means. So a bear, there's another possible predator of the Near East, which is used often, by the way. Bears are often used as parallels to lions. You'll remember what David said when he was going to challenge Goliath. And he said, well, you're just a boy, you know, with a slingshot. What are you going to do, you know, with this slingshot? What are you going to do? He said, well, I have smitten bears and lions and knocked them out and take the lamb out of their mouth. I've smitten the bear and the lion. Okay, so you have in chapter 7 and verse 5, it's a very powerful predator, but you'll see metaphors for it in Proverbs 28, verse 15. Like a roaring lion and a rushing bear is a wicked ruler over poor people. Listen to this terrible indictment of wicked rulers. Listen to this. And a rushing bear, a roaring lion, what does he do? He just devours, he eats up the people. And a rushing bear, you know, if a bear is robbed of its cubs, it's going to rush at you like you've never seen. And you'd be shocked at how fast bears can move. You think bear is ponderous, it's often slow, but when it's aroused and it's angry, that bear can move faster than you. You can't outrun it. So here's, and you don't try climbing a tree, because unless it's a big, Kodiak bear or a brown bear or a grizzly bear, they don't usually, but a black bear will come up the tree for you. This is Proverbs 28:15. Like a roaring lion, a lion and a rushing bear is a wicked ruler over poor people. Yeah, he slaughters them. Yeah, he can destroy them. Yes, he robs them and takes their money, takes their taxes, takes their thing, makes them poor. And what do they do about it? Nothing. He's got all the power. All right, Amos chapter 5, verse 19. As when a man flees from a lion and a bear meets him, or goes home and leans against the wall and a snake bites him. They used to use these metaphors of a lion, a bear, often in the ancient times. This might refer to the Medo-Persian Empire, which seems to be done in chapter 8 and verse 21 of Daniel. You have chapter 8 and verse 21. It says, and the shaggy goat represents the kingdom of Greece, and the large horn, which is between his eyes, is the first king, the ram. So you see these different ones are being interpreted, so it's very possible, and much it looks like, that the big bear represents Persia, the Medo-Persian Empire. Possibly raised up on one side may refer to the supremacy of Persia over the Medes and preparing to attack again, even though it was still eating the last victim. Just eating and going to attack somebody else. A metaphor for the unsatisfied power and military destruction and conquests that they want. What the three ribs are, I'm not sure. It's translated from the Aramaic tusks. It could be three ribs, three tusks. It means some kind of bone that had a curve in it. That's the word in the Aramaic. But also, the uses of the Hebrew word are to play a part in what is called the side of the hill, the side of the chamber. It's going to be on one side, and three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. This is a parallel to the ram of chapter 8 and verse 4, where ribs may relate to the three directions and areas of conquest. We don't know. We're just getting an idea. Babylon was to the west, Lydia to the north, and Egypt to the south. Ben Ezra, a Jewish interpreter, thinks they refer to the three cities which were conquered, those three cities. And we know from historical records that the Medo-Persia Empire did not have many conquests in the east, did not, until the reign of Darius, the Mede. Then he got many more conquests. But prior to that, the Medes didn't do too much. The conquests of the Persian Empire were frightfully destructive. Many historians refer to it as it was ponderous in its movements. It gained its victory by hurling masses of troops and masses of armies against its enemies. It is easy to see how the movements of such an enormous bodies of armies could be considered to be devouring much flesh. Now, that's these are historians who look at it from a historical perspective. Daniel 7 and verse 6. So here he, after this, I kept looking, and behold, another one, like a leopard. Now again, it's not a leopard, but it's like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast who had four heads, this beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So it was looked like a, you know, like a body of a leopard, looked like that, but it had four heads, had wings on its back. So it could go, wings implies it could move very fast. Okay, four wings of a bird, and the beast had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So if the third animal here is Greece, the most likely identification of the four heads would be the fourfold division. After Alexander the Great died, his kingdom was divided into four different parts. So let's read this. Let's go to, and I kept looking, and behold, another one like a leopard, this is verse 6, which had on its back four wings, and the bird, and the beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. Now verse 7, after this I kept looking, he kept looking to this vision, and I, in the night visions, and I behold a fourth beast. Now here's how Daniel described it, different ways. I'm going to read it in different translations. Here's the, I'm reading it now in the New American Standard. Dreadful and terrifying. He looks at this thing, it's just horrible, dreadful, terrifying, this beast. Extremely strong, and it had large teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Different from all the others. Now remember, he could say, well, that one looked sort of like a lion. Well, this one reminded me of a bear, and that one looked like a leopard, but, you know, wasn't a leopard, but it looked like a leopard. Had four heads. But this one didn't look like any. It was so terrifying. It was a beast of some sort, but it scared. Let me read this in the New English Translation. After these things, as I kept watching in the night, visions, a fourth beast appeared. One, dreadful, terrible, and very strong. It was one beast that was dreadful, terrible, and evidently it was hideous to look at. Just, it had two large rows of iron teeth. Can you imagine? Two large rows of iron teeth. It devoured and crushed, and anything that was left, it trampled with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that came before it, and it had 10 horns again. Let me read that in the New International Version. After these things, after that, in my vision of the night, I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening to look at it, and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. So there's what we have. Okay? He looked at it, it had 10 horns, it crushed, it was very strong, it was dreadful, it was ugly, it was hideous, it was scary to look at. Now, the book of Revelation has a special interest in the number 10, right? The book of Revelation, if you read the number, because it had 10 horns, and it's a nice word, it's a nice number, because, you know, 10, you just 10, and then it's 20, and then it's 30, and so on. You go multiply by tens. There was 10 days of the tribulation are predicted for the church at Smyrna. The red dragon and the beast with seven heads and 10 horns. In Revelation 12, verses 3 and 4, another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on his heads. And in chapter 12 and verse 17, the dragon was enraged at the woman and went off to make war against her and her offspring, those who obey the commandments and hold the testimony of Jesus. They're after God's people. These are horrifying things that Daniel is seeing. They're coming after God's people. Then the angel, this is chapter 17 of Daniel, chapter 17. Then the angel carried me away in the spirit into the desert. There I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names. It had 7 heads and 10 horns. See, the 10 appears in the book of Revelation a lot, or multiples of 10. Multiples of 10. The 1,000 is a multiple of 10. Revelation 17 and verse 7, then the angel said to me, "Why are you astonished? I will explain to you the mystery of the woman of the beast that she rides that has the 7 heads and 10 horns." And in verse 12, the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received the kingdom, but who for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast. That's from the Revelation 17, verse 12. And Revelation 17, verse 16, the beast and the 10 horns that you saw will hate the prostitute. They will bring her to ruin and leave her naked. They will eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Sort of like Daniel's beast here, iron teeth, it just devours things, and whatever is left, it stomps them and destroys them. Destroys them. Okay? So, we have these beasts. Now, in Revelation chapter 13, and beginning from chapter 13, 1 through 14, I'm going to turn there because they seem to be a takeoff on Daniel's prophecies. The things of Daniel are put here in the book of Revelation. So let's take a look at Revelation 13, beginning in verse 1. The dragon stood on the sea. Now, we talked about that dragon. How many heads does it have? 7. How many horns does it have? 10. The dragon stood on the sea of the seashore. Now, here, sand of the seashore. And I saw a beast. This is John now saying, I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, from that sea, and having 10 horns, 7 heads. On his horns were 10 diadems, little crown, little special things. And on the heads were blasphemous names. Each of these heads had things against God and against God's people. The beast which I saw was like, what was it like? Like a leopard. And his feet were like those of a bear. Now here you have a composite of Daniel's beasts. This beast is a composite. It had a body like a leopard. It had feet like a bear. It had a mouth like a lion. Okay, here's the composite of Daniel's first three beasts. And the dragon gave him his power. Where did he get his power? Who's the dragon? We know it is Satan, the devil. The devil, that old serpent. The dragon is a big old serpent, kind of a great, overly done serpent. The dragon gave him his power. Now, in our next sermon, I want to continue. I'm going to show you Old Testament beasts that parallel what we see here in Revelation and a takeoff on Daniel's, described minutely in the Old Testament. One coming out of the sea, one coming from the land. You will be surprised in our next sermon.